Welcome to Music Matters Podcast with Daryl Craig Harris, talking about all things music with celebrities, artists, music business insiders, and more.
Mr. Rocky Lynn, how are you doing today?
Oh, hi, Daryl. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Music Matters. I'm a big fan, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, likewise, I was checking out your albums last night. Really great music. You've got a new album out that just came out this week and also a TV documentary. How did you get started in the music business? I know you've had a lot of success, huge numbers, streaming, lots of touring. But how did you originally get started with songwriting and playing music?
It's a little bit, I guess, what the documentary is about. I was found in a garbage dumpster. And I grew up at a place called I was just a couple days old when I was abandoned. And I grew up at a place called the Barium Springs Home for Children, which is an orphanage. They don't have orphanages like that anymore. But in the old days, it was, like a big concrete building with, 200 kids in it. And this man came there. They would come to the laundry area and he played guitar for us. I think I was about 4 years old. And man, I've never really done drugs, but I think that must be what drugs are like, because that guitar, he sang, "I'm going to Alabama with a banjo on my knee," and I thought, I'm going to do that for the rest of my life, Daryl. And here I am, 140 years old, and I'm still trying to learn how to play that guitar, man. So I think he made a big impression on me,
Yeah, it's a lifelong thing, right? You always try to get better and learn more and do more. So how did you get started as a professional musician? I know you did a lot of sideman kind of playing, right?
By the time I got to high school, I was playing in bands with people my age now and on the week. So instead of having like regular work jobs, I played in a band with a bunch of old men. So I started playing. And since I had grown up, I was adopted when I was about five, but we grew up on a dirt road, a little dirt road in North Carolina. So in my simple mind, I was a professional then, because I knew I was going to do it for the rest of my life. But then I wanted to go out to California to this school called Musicians Institute more than anything in the whole world. I know you went there in 19...
I went to the same school.
So in 1985, were you in the old school? That's before they moved, right?
Yeah, I was in the original building with Howard Roberts and all these legendary studio musicians. It was such an exciting play, right on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, my God. And being a bass player, I mean, Jeff Berlin, Tim Bogert. Oh, my God. They were all there at that time, right?
All those guys. That's an amazing background. So tell me what your experience was like going to that school.
Well, it was literally my whole entire dream was to go to that school. And I joined the United States Army because they would pay for it. I would have no other way to get there. If I end up being someone who I really love our country, and I think I'm patriotic at my core, but at the time I really just wanted to go to GIT. And if I did 3 years in the Army, they would take me there. So I did my time in the Army, and they did exactly as they said. I went to California, and quite frankly, Daryl, I was overwhelmed because I grew up in a small town. And in the little high school in North Carolina that I went to, I was generally considered, one of the good guitar players there. I'm not bragging, but I just was. And then in my barracks in the Army, it was me and this other guy named Stollenberger. And other than that, we were like the best guitar players there. I was naive enough to think, since I was the best guitar player at my high school and one of the best guitar players in the barracks, I'd go to California and get discovered, be Eddie Van Halen. I just knew it. I got out there, and the very first day, I took my little pig nose amp and my Hamer guitar, and I sat down right on Yucca Street where my apartment was, and I started playing all my fast licks I knew, thinking somebody might discover me. That's how simple it was. And there was this guy there, Daryl. This is how, I don't know if you believe in God or heaven or whatever you want to call it, how they work to humble you and to head you in the right direction. There was a man there working on the gardens. He was a gardener, and he looked like he'd had a rough life, kind of stringy hair, and I noticed he kept watching me play, and so I was thinking, oh, I'm getting good. I'll try to play faster. And he'd work his way over toward me, and he got up to me, and he said, there's a much easier way to do that. And I said, there is. And I handed him my guitar, and I'd had that guitar for years and years, but that was the first time that guitar played music. That man, he played some chords on that guitar, and he ran them together with little runs. And all of a sudden, it wasn't some kid just trying to play Ain't Talking About Love. It was a man making music. And it struck me, you know, and I took the amp and the guitar and I went back up to my one room studio apartment. And, you know, I was deployed in the Army. I was a paratrooper. I'd been to places people shouldn't go. And I just sat there and wept. And I thought, what am I going to do? I'm like the worst guitar player out here. And then I thought, well, I could dig in. And that's where I started this thing, I think, that helped me when you talk about being a sideman and stuff like that. Daryl, I always tried to get in bands where I was the worst player in the band. I wanted to play with people that I could sponge off of and learn from. And so I was fortunate enough to get some gigs for people that had really good bands and, you know, were doing well in the world. And I never, ever want to walk into a room and feel like, look at my guitar and feel like, oh, I got this. I know what I'm doing. You know, it's the same with a motorcycle. The day you think you know how to ride a motorcycle, you need to hang those keys up, man, because you're going to get hurt. And so I just want to try to learn it as much. And I'm still trying to figure it out. My band now, everybody in that band is 10 times the musician I am.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and I've often said that, like, it's better. You know, I had the same deal that you had. When I was 18 years old, I was playing with all these guys that were 60. And my first gig was with the Champs, the group that did Tequila. That was my first pro gig. And I was 18 years old. Yeah, Danny Flores, who was the sax player from Tequila, said Tequila on the record. You know, he sat down at the piano. He goes, kid, I want you to play these notes on this song. This is the bass part. And I'm like, cool. That was actually the best lesson I've ever gotten for music. Just play the part. Like you said, just really focus. Always try to get better. As soon as you think you got this, somebody's going to come up and just smack you.
They're probably going to come up and smack me anyway. But
yeah, so, you know. So where do you live now? Are you in Nashville?
Well, we lived in Nashville for decades and years. And almost 10 years ago now, we moved back to the little town that I grew up in Statesville, North Carolina. The gentleman that adopted me when I was 5 years old, he's now 91 years old, and he has this thing called macular degeneration, which means he's losing his vision. He's lost it in one eye. And there again, that's life and God teaching me a big lesson, because now I get to care for him and make sure he's got a roof over his head, just like he did for me when I was 5 years old and didn't have a roof. It's a blessing. So we're back here, and then we travel back and forth to Nashville a lot because I still try to, you know, write and stuff like that.
Yeah. So your first hit, A Lipstick, what year was that? Was that 2000?
I think so. I think it was sometime around in there. I'm not sure what year it is now, but.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a while ago. So tell me about that. So how did you get your first record deal, and what was that process like? And did you write that song? Or
I wrote that with my friend Mark Prentice, who also played bass on that same song. And I had actually moved up. I'd lived in Nashville for, gosh, just years and years, and played with a bunch of people. And I ended up deciding I was going to try to go out on my own. And so before the Lipstick record, I had done 3 albums. And back in those days, Daryl, as you know, you could tour and make a living playing the big nightclubs. Like, you go to Denver and play Grizzly Rose, go down and play Billy Bob's. You can play in Huntington Beach. I think it was the Cactus Saloon or whatever it was called up there. But there was all these big bars, and you'd go and play for a whole week, and you could continue to play music the next week, which means you win, you know. And I ended up having a good following of all places up in Minnesota. So I remember one night we were playing at this place called Pavlitsky's right outside of Minneapolis, and we had the night off because they were going to have boxing in the big club that night, and we didn't have to go anywhere. And this Minnesota lady said to me, you ought to come see the best band in Minnesota. And I said, well, I'll come with you, honey. And so she took me to this place. We paid $10 to get in, and it was a band up there. They were really good, a good playing band. They sounded great. The singer, let me get my guitar. The singer, They weren't playing original music, though, and we played all original stuff. And they come out and they're playing. So they're doing that cover kind of song. Yeah. And when the guy came to sing, really good-looking guy, he goes, "Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee, you know?" I mean, he was from Minnesota. He sounded like he was right out of the Fargo movie. I went back to the hotel that night, and I said, "Guys, I'm moving to Minnesota." And my whole entire Nashville band quit. And then I moved up to Minnesota, where I kind of started over. And in, I think it was 5.5 years, Daryl, we had sold 150,000 CDs out of the trunk of my car and become like a real draw. The year before I got my record deal on Universal, I did 320 one-nighters. And that's just a band and a and a big 8x20 trailer working night after night. And we were fortunate enough to.
Yeah, that's a crazy schedule.
And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have someone, Bruce Larson, saw me play. He was a guy from Warner Brothers, and he took me to meet Elise Levy from Universal, and she made me an appointment with Kevin Law, who let me play for Doug Morris. So it was the first time in my life, I was 39 years old, I sat down in front of a record executive. It was Doug Morris in New York City with Tommy Mottola in the room, Avery and Monty Lipman. I didn't know that, though. Thank God I didn't know. I probably would have not been able to do it. And I sang three songs, and they signed me on the spot. So it's really, and that's what the documentary is about, Daryl. It's about, it doesn't matter whether you want to be a bass player for Cirque du Soleil or a guy plumbing or wanting to start a rickshaw business in Shanghai. If you have a dream, I hope this encourages people to stick with it and know that it can come to you at any time in life. You know, music, especially music, music can come from people our age. Young people making music is great, and their perception of life is wonderful, and I love to hear that too. But we have it from a different perspective when we're writing, and there's still a market for that as well. Right. You know, we think about our parents. The 50-year-old my parents were is a way different 50-year-old than I am, I think. I hope.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. The thing that I have often said that when I was a kid, somebody was 50 years old, I felt like they were like, you know, they were ancient. But it's funny now because, yeah, like we were just talking about Gary Puckett. I mean, Gary's still out doing it. He's almost 80 years old. I know a lot of guys like that, but that's all they know. That's what they do. And they still have an audience. So why not?
I saw David Coverdale come out and sing as good as he's ever sang in his life. And I mean, he's got to be 80 years old, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys have been around forever. God bless them. They still enjoy it. They still want to do it. That's awesome. So tell me, let's go to the new album. Tell me, and I was actually just checking that out last night. It sounds great. You have such a classic, full, rich country voice that I love, and the songs are great. So tell me about making this new album that just got released.
The album's called Love, and the last three or four records I've done have been what you would call a concept record. The Songs for Soldiers record is all for my charity, Tribute to the Troops, and that's how we... And that's all songs about being, you know, songs for soldiers. But it could. So, and then the album before this was called Faith, and it was all songs about faith. But the idea, the concept is I'm going to write a whole album about love, but not I love you, you love me. Okay, you can have one of those, but what are the other 11 songs going to be? You know, and as a guy who writes every single day, I think writing songs is like plumbing or throwing darts, you know? And like, so if I gave you a dart and I had a dart and we both threw at some dartboard, I'd miss it and you'd hit the board. But if I gave you 1,000 darts, by the time you were off to 500 or 600 darts, you'd be kind of figuring it out. And that's what songwriting is. You know, I've been writing every day since I was a kid. I write. And so I was going to try to write an album about love that went along with this movie, because the movie is about love. We could have made a really ugly movie, Daryl. We could have made a movie about being thrown into a garbage dumpster and going through foster homes and all the things that should never happen in those kind of places. But we don't even mention it. You know, we mention where I'm from. And then in the movie, I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, with the songwriting idea. So the idea was to write songs about love. Like one of the songs, the second song on the album is called Heavy Load. And I wrote it after this kid named Dylan Ruth went into Charleston, South Carolina. Then these people invited him to come in and worship with him and pray with him. And he came in and they fed the young man. And they started having a service. They would have a worship or a Bible study. And then he killed them. He killed every one of them. So my heavy load is about how in the world do we, as human beings, try to forgive and move on with that? That's the concept of that love. And so let me grab this guitar again. And so the whole song was about shot rang out and innocence died. Everybody shook their head and wondered why did he have nobody? What went wrong? How did the heart get that dark and gone? Here comes the key change, Daryl. Sometimes when it's hard to bear the weight, sometimes when you feel about to break, let love carry every heavy load. that's kind of the idea, where you take something that couldn't possibly right. be a love song and make it about love and forgiveness. That's probably like the longest, loudest, wrongest answer I could ever give, but that's what it was.
That's okay, man, because you know what? I mean, we need that. We need answers, and we need a lot more love and more caring about each other these days, because of course we live in, I suspect we're on the same page with a lot of stuff, and it's tough. The world we live in is tough. So it's good to have music that inspires people, makes them look at things
absolutely,
a little differently.
Man.
What's going to be your first single off this album?
More, which is also about what the movie is about, because that was my single that was the song that got me signed in Doug Morris's office. And then my record company went bankrupt in 2000, whatever, whenever the economy went to places before that song got its due. And so it's a little bit like that. We put it out about 3 weeks ago, and I don't know how, but we've already got like almost 200,000 views on the YouTube and all kinds of people listening to it. So it's because of people like you being kind enough to let me come and talk to you on your show and talk mm-hmm. with your folks. And I appreciate that, Daryl. It means the world to me.
Well, it's important to showcase quality artists and songwriting. Songwriting to me has always been a thing. And I had a similar experience growing up. I saw my dad's friend playing guitar and singing at one of the house parties. And I was like, man, that was a magical thing. So I have such an appreciation for that. And it's definitely mm-hmm. an art form. The singer-songwriter is something that not uniquely American, but it's very American, right? And especially the country artists, that seems to be the place where that really lives and grows and still prospers. The TV documentary just came out, and I think it's on Amazon.
Amazon Prime, and it's soon to be on all the PBS stations nationwide as well on their their online services.
Awesome.
And you know, it's interesting because when they came to me, I used to host this other TV show on A&E, but the people that did that, J.C. Summerford specifically, came up and wanted to do a documentary about me. And I really thought that was the craziest idea ever, you know, because, I mean, you know, the way I ended up in the orphanage, that's not a movie. That's just a bad hand. That's getting dealt a bad hand. And then I grew up a little hard. But that's just luck, too. And then I was lucky enough to be in the Army. That's just good luck, because that still today is given back to me in spades. Then I went to California to be Eddie Van Halen, right. Except taller and more handsome. But that didn't work out. And so then I moved to Tennessee to be Tim McGraw, except taller and more handsome. And now I'm currently shooting for Willie Nelson. That's what I'm doing now. I'm thinking I got a shot at Willie. But anyway, none of that seemed like a movie until, as we began to film this thing, they had this DNA. My friend Kathleen ordered me a 23andMe DNA service. And then they were able to find my father, my birth father. And here's what's interesting. He never knew that I was born, never knew he had another son. He had a whole nother family. You know, I now have three sisters and a brother. Guess what he did, Daryl? He was a guitar player in a country band. He was a paratrooper wow. in the 82nd Airborne, and he rode a motorcycle
crazy.
His whole life. We were just alike. And I got to meet my father, and I got to know him, and I got to be by his bedside as he transitioned into heaven. And that's something that I would have never, regardless of about a movie or an album or anything, I went from not really being from anywhere to being from somewhere. Being somebody, this is where I'm from.
Right.
And I hope I didn't give it too much of the movie away, but the story of my mother and what actually happened is even more crazy than that. And that's in the movie as well.
Isn't it interesting that a lot of very famous musicians or artists in general, they have a tumultuous childhood? That's a very common thing. And I think also, like you said, I had something similar to me in terms of like the Army, but I did drum corps music, but that really like made me man up. I had some really great male role models, which I'm sure you did in the service as well. And that changes your life, right?
Absolutely, man. I remember graduating from the, you know, from the Army school and the sergeant coming up and they hit you real hard in the chest with the wings and they push them on your chest. And right before he did it, he said, son, if you can do this, you can do anything. And then he
right.
put that achievement we had earned on it. And nobody had ever said anything like that to me before. And that's right. that's the blessing of growing up like that. You don't, you know, I mean, my children get adulation heralded on them from the moment they're born to every second they're awake. I'm telling them how great they are, but nobody had ever told me that.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And when he said that to me, I thought, yeah, I can, you know, and I'm still right. thinking, as long as I keep trying, maybe we can.
Yeah. And, you know, your father's with you, too. He's looking out for you. So
without any doubt.
That. Yeah. So that's awesome, man. Yeah. You know what? We all need that, especially young boys. You need male role models. And I think if we had more of that, we'd have a lot less problems today, as I'm sure you probably feel similar to that.
I feel exactly the same way. It's time for us to take our families and be in, you know, for men to be in charge of the families, not in charge, they run them equally with the women, but if you make a child, you have to stay there. You know, you need to be, need to be in the home. I have a lot of kids that come through here in my studio that I work with all the time. And you can instantly tell the young man who's had someone point him in the right direction and the kid that's just struggling to find his way in the world. And as all the stuff that you and I have been blessed with and the great, wonderful places we've got to see, the least we can do is reach back and try to find some of those kids that are headed the way we want to go and help them avoid some of the potholes that we hit a whole bunch of those times, you know?
Yeah, because this life thing is challenging.
For sure, exactly.
As you know, yeah. Hey, so tell me about your charity for the troops or your cause that you founded the foundation. So tell me about all that.
So Tribute to the Troops is a 501c3 nonprofit. I don't really know what that means, but the people that handle that do. It means that we're an all-volunteer organization. Nobody gets paid nothing. And what we do is that we go to the homes of people whose young men and women who have been in the service of our country and died since 9/11. Now, that could be people that got killed in combat. It could be people that died of natural causes, but were in the service. And it also means people who lose their battle with post-traumatic stress and take their own life. We see them as the same. We see that as a person coming back from war and he can't handle it and she can't handle it and something happens. We stand. And so what we do is we get on motorcycles and we go to where that kid grew up, to where his family is. And we stand in their yard and we say thank you. We thank them for their sacrifice, because every day is Memorial Day at their house, brother. Every day.
Yeah.
We've raised over $1 million and we've helped send 123 children to college whose parents have been killed in the war. And that's, again, all because of people like you and your listeners helping us do it and knowing that. That's the great thing about our organization. When you give us funds to do that, every penny goes directly for that.
Right. Yeah, that's such an important thing, and especially for those kids, because they're already dealing with the trauma, and then they still need an education. They need to know that there's guys behind them that are looking out for them. That's super important, right?
I've stood in hundreds of yards of families whose children didn't come home, and I tell you, man, I don't know if you have children, but if something happened to one of my kids, I don't think I could even get up, man. They're so brave and they're so strong. I look up to them. And if I can give a little bit back from all the stuff that they gave to me and all the freedoms that their children died for so that we could have, it's the very least we could do in this world.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, super important. And I guess pray for those guys and their families. And hopefully there's somebody out there looking out for them. It's a bit challenging these days, but, you know, we won't go into that. Tell me how people can find that if they want to donate or if they want to get involved. What's the best way to contact you?
Well, probably if they're looking up things on this interview and they go to my website, there'll be a thing there that says Tribute to the Troops, and you can click on it. And the website for the whole organization is tributetothetroops.org. tributetothetroops.org. And you can find out when we're going to be in your state, because we do it about one time a year in each state. There's a whole bunch of them coming up, so you can see where they are. And then you don't have to ride a motorcycle. You can come in other vehicles, too. It started on motorcycles, but now we just want as many people as possible to go and thank those people.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'm friends with Randy Couture, and Randy has his organization, too. He's doing great stuff. So
he's a patriot,
man. It's amazing,
man.
Amazing to see people giving back like that. Super important. Yeah, we'll definitely put the links to your website, and we'll get all that in the posting. Let me ask you this. So you have a long career. You're actually working and producing other artists. What's your best advice for young artists, young singer-songwriters?
My best advice would be, I think there are four or five things that will almost ensure that you are successful in this business. Todd Rundgren once said, if you're willing to build it and spend long enough farming it, you'll find your tribe. And so I think if you got a dream, and it doesn't matter if people say you can sing or can't sing, I can't sing, or people that say you can play or not, if you have something in your heart, I think, one, you work as hard as you can to build your craft. Like, don't just learn how to play other songs and stuff. Learn the theory behind it. Learn how the instrument was built. Learn about the people that did that. And then go out and play. Always play. Play every single time you can play. Number three, play your own music. Every single VFW in the whole country's got some 50-year-old man that thinks, what if I'd have done that? What if I'd have tried instead of playing Proud Mary for the 5,000th time? Nothing wrong with Proud Mary. I love that song. But play your own music. And then number four, when you're out there playing your own music, have a way where people can reach you. You know, in the old days back when you and I were just started, it started in a yellow pad and a form, and I'd get your address. I was coming back to the Grizzly Rose, I'd send you a postcard and tell you I was coming, and that's how we build the followings. Now the young people, they can do it electronically. But make sure that when people come to you, because when they listen to your music, have that music available. Do what you have to do to get it recorded and have it online so that when you meet someone, you can say, this is me, this is what my music's about, and I can get it. And here is the one thing. That's five things that'll make you successful. And here's the one thing that will guarantee that you fail. And I know people are thinking right now, oh, it's if you start doing drugs or if you're drinking or if you want. It's none of that, because I play with every kind of person you can imagine, and that has nothing to do with it. But the one thing for sure that will stop your dream in its tracks is if you quit.
Right.
Don't quit. Don't ever, ever, ever give up the ghost on it. Go down singing.
Yeah, and that's good advice for life. Just, you know, you see that graphic where the guy's digging a tunnel and the diamonds are just here and he gives up. He doesn't ever hits the diamonds, and you got to just keep swinging, right?
Don't quit 1 minute before your miracle, man. I'm with you.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of times we make our own miracles just by putting energy out there, hustling. There's people watching you that you'll never know they're watching you, and they'll come down and help you out. And it's just mainly stay positive, be a good person, get out there and do it, and kind of wake up every day on a mission.
Right.
I think it's kind of, that's kind of the thing that's worked well for me. Thank you so much for joining me. I know you're busy. You guys are doing a lot of interviews right now and everything's kind of moving fast, but I encourage everybody to check you out on Spotify. It's a Rocky Lynn, lots of great, great music and, you know, authentic, great country and the stuff that you did for the troops. Those songs are just awesome. And that's a cause that's close to my heart. You know, I care a lot about those guys, and there are a lot of them are kids.
Absolutely.
Like you said. So, you know, definitely we gotta nurture that generation. That's going to be our future. But thank you so much, Rocky. I really appreciate it. And it's great to hear your stories. And we could probably do another hour, because I think we have a lot of probably similar thoughts and beliefs, but definitely appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate you, Daryl. I appreciate the time of all your listeners, and I look forward to seeing you again. And when I get out to California, maybe we can pick some. I'd love to do that. And I think,
yeah,
it's great,
be fun.
Because just as you coined, music matters, brother.
Absolutely. All right, man. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thanks for joining us. And please consider subscribing to our podcast and follow us on our social media pages for guest announcements.